This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Lowndes County, Alabama covers about 700 square miles in the south central portion of that state, part of the Black Belt, a region with dense soil that was once home to thriving cotton plantations. The area declined rapidly during industrialization, and the chalky clay soil that was once an economic boon became a disaster for sewage systems. Today, more than a third of Lowndes County residents live in poverty, making it one of the poorest counties in the nation. Large swaths of the county have either inadequate or no septic system, and that leads to an array of public health and environmental issues. It is in this context that my guest today has been fighting for environmental justice. Catherine Coleman Flowers is an internationally recognized advocate for human rights and water sanitation. She's also the 2017 Franklin Humanities Institute practitioner in residence at Duke University. Catherine Coleman Flowers, welcome back to the State of Things.
Thank you very much.
I had you on the phone just a few weeks ago talking about some of these issues, but tell us more about Lowndes County, Alabama, a place where your family has a long history.
Yes, Lowndes County, Alabama is located between Selma and Montgomery, and most of the Selma to Montgomery March route goes through Lowndes County. I think it's very interesting because of its history, its illustrious history. If anybody's ever read Bloody Lowndes by Dr. Hassan Jeffries, who's a Duke alum, he talks about Lowndes County's history going back to the sharecroppers movement when W.E.B. Du Bois actually went there in the early part of the last century studying the labor issues that were taking place in Lowndes County at that time. So it's had a great history in terms of movement and being progressive, despite the fact there was a lot of aggression and racial terror was used to control the labor, and hence the name Bloody Lowndes. Violet Luzzo was killed in Lowndes County at the end of the Selma to Montgomery March. Jonathan Daniels was also killed in Lowndes County around that time. And there are many more that we don't know who were killed there. I also work for the Equal Justice Initiative, which has been documenting lynchings, and our very first lynching monument to people that were killed there was placed in Lowndes County.
And of course, the cause for all of this violence is the economic value that it had for white landowners as cotton plantations. So tell us about that and the soil that made it, again, very valuable to white landowners.
Well, the soil was excellent for planting crops, and particularly cotton. So as a part of that history, Montgomery became one of the slave trading ports, one of the most prosperous ports. And I believe it was Lehman Brothers that traded in slaves who got its start in Montgomery. Mm-hmm. And after the Constitution ended the importation of slaves at a certain time from other places, so there was a domestic slave trade. And Montgomery was one of those places where slaves were brought in. Actually, the offices for EJI, the building where we're located, was a slave-holding pen. And people were brought to the square and then auctioned off, and they went to places like Lowndes County. And therefore, the population of the Black Belt region, which Lowndes County is a part of, was majority African-American. And the soils, once slavery ended, there wasn't a lot to replace it. And as a result, people that stayed in the area, there were no jobs, no investment in terms of infrastructure to keep people in the area, even to the point that where they did have wastewater treatment, you can trace it back to those areas that were first inhabited largely by white populations. And even in the two towns that had wastewater infrastructure, it stopped, you know, where the Black community started. So that those legacies are still in existence
today. And this is, of course, this legacy of environmental injustice that is done to communities of color in particular who don't get the services. And this leads to important sanitation problems, which you discovered by a curious route. Tell us about going back to Lowndes County and what you discovered.
Well, I moved back to Lowndes County in the area in 2000. And initially, I was doing economic development, and what I found for the county, and what I found is that you can't recruit businesses and services into an area that has no infrastructure. And then during that process, I also found out that the residents were being arrested because they did not have on-site systems. They couldn't afford them because the on-site systems there are very, very expensive. They have to be engineered because of the soil.
Septic systems.
Right? Yes, yeah. The septic systems. And that's the same soils that are good for planting are not good for on-site wastewater treatment. So what generally happens, a homeowner, generally if they build a home or they buy a home, of course, all of it comes with the plumbing. But when you flush the toilet, it has to be treated. You know, we don't think about this in urban communities. This is a problem in rural communities around the country. But in urban communities, you flush the toilet, it goes to a central place where it's treated before it's discharged back into the environment. In places like Lowndes County, rural communities, the homeowner is responsible for that. But when you have the type of soils that we have that holds water, engineered systems are necessary. And these systems can cost anywhere from $6,000 on up to $30,000 or more. And with the people being poor, they cannot afford that. So what happens if someone reports it to the health department, which is the regulator, then they will get them a notice and cite them for it. And after a period of time, if they can't afford it, the practice at that time was to go to file charges against them. They would end up having to go to court. Or based on the current laws, they can be fined up to $500 a day for each day that they're not in compliance. So when I got involved, a number of people had been arrested for being unable to pay for an on-site system.
And of course, the county is not providing probably what it should under these circumstances, which is a system of wastewater treatment.
The county can't afford it. There's no tax base. That's the problem. We were talking about poor communities where they don't have the type of tax base that would support these kinds of things. And it's really interesting because the paradigm is set up where you have to have the infrastructure in place to have the tax base. But if you can't afford the tax base, then there's no infrastructure. Right. And as a result, nothing happens.
So not only are now people are getting arrested now because they can't afford to put in the septic system, the county can't afford to put in waste treatment, there's serious health problems that you encountered personally.
Yes, I was called after I got involved in trying to stop the arrests. We came up with an agreement with the health department where when someone was cited, they would call us and we would try to work to see what we can do to resolve the problem as best we could. And as long as we were working with that, then they would not arrest anyone. Well, maybe around 2008 or so, I received a call from the health department about a young woman. I think she was 26 years old, living in a single white mobile home. She was pregnant. She already had one child who was autistic. She lived on her family's property. Her mother had a house and a septic system, but she didn't. I don't know who reported her because there was nobody that was that close to them. But anyway, they reported that she didn't have a septic system. They told me that they were going to arrest her and asked me to meet them at the site. So I decided to go with a reporter from the Associated Press because I thought that would be one way to hold it up. And we went there, talked to her. Outside her home, the back of her home was a pit full of raw sewage. And it had rained, I remember precisely because it was in October, it had rained a lot. And it was teeming with mosquitoes. I was wearing a dress that day. And the mosquitoes bit me. I had numerous bites. And I kind of thought about it, but pushed it to the back of my mind, like these mosquitoes were sitting on top of raw sewage, and I was bitten numerous times. You know, I was wondering whether anything was possibly wrong. And then a few weeks later, my body broke out in a rash. And I went to my doctor and I asked her to test me to make sure that I hadn't caught anything because of this rash, which I've never had before. And she tested me. The results came back negative. They didn't find anything. And I said, is it possible that there is something here that doctors in the U.S. are not testing for because they don't expect it to be in the United States? Because using common sense and being a country girl, I just knew that with climate change, and it's warmer than it used to be, raw sewage on the ground, that could mean disease. Yeah. And maybe diseases that typically are not found in the U.S. because they don't expect them to be here. So in that process, I read the New York Times quite a bit, and I read an op-ed piece that was written by Dr. Peter Hotez. And I kept rereading and rereading his op-ed piece and finally decided to Google him and found an email address. And I wrote him and shared my experience. He wrote me back. And it just so happened he was in Atlanta, which is about 2.5 hours away. He was going to be in Atlanta for a conference. I met him there, and I told him about my experience. And he said, we're going to look for hookworm. That's the first thing he mentioned to me. I hadn't even heard of hookworm before. So he sent his parasitologist to Lowndes County during that summer. And we went around to places where we knew raw sewage was on the ground and asked family members that lived in those conditions whether or not they would give us fecal samples, which they did. We collected fecal samples and also collected soil and water samples in some of those areas, and later collected blood samples. And using PCR technology, which looks for the DNA for these tropical parasites, we were able to discover over 5 tropical parasites, which we're going to talk about in more details in a study that has not been published yet, but it is. Once it's published, we're going to be able to reveal.
These are parasites that we don't see in the United States of America, that we don't see really in developed countries, and now they're showing up in Lowndes County and who knows where else in rural counties in America.
It's just like Zika. Yeah. You know, we didn't see Zika either, yeah. But now we're seeing it, and I think that one of the things that we got to look at as it relates to climate change is that we're going to start seeing new diseases.
So it's climate change on the one hand, and then again, this infrastructure and poverty, this question of environmental justice, whether people have a right to a certain standard of living if they call themselves American citizens. What do we do about this? I mean, where does the answer lie, and do we have any strategies for dealing with these kinds of problems?
Well, I think that what we have is this is where environmental justice and climate change intersects, because not only are we having these problems in Lowndes County, anywhere there are frontline communities that are poor, they're suffering with this type of injustice. We're seeing it, and I've seen it firsthand in West Virginia, for an example, when I went there and saw how people are dealing with the degradation of their communities because of mountaintop removal, and it's leading to a lot of disease and sickness from being exposed to various toxins, how their water is being contaminated from fracking. I'm also seeing, you know, along the Gulf Coast where people have dealt with where the BP
oil spills.
We've had, you know, hurricanes in that area that have devastated communities that were already devastated. So Lowndes County is not uncommon. I think that the thing about Lowndes County that's unique is that every living president has gone to Selma and passed through Lowndes County, and we still have this problem. And it's a problem that the Rockefeller Foundation evolved from the Rockefeller Sanitary Commission, whose purpose was to eliminate hookworm. And here we are again in the richest country in the world. I think this is the most extreme form of inequality that anyone can point to, because, you know, we talk about Flint, and Flint was a travesty as well. But Flint was flawed, was infrastructure that had failed. Lowndes County was no infrastructure at all.
Are you getting – you're at Duke now and as the in this interdisciplinary program at the Franklin Institute. Is Duke at all participating and trying to find an answer for this?
Yes. Actually, we are forming a collaborative across many disciplinary areas at Duke where we're working with students and faculty on finding potential solutions, solutions that will range around – financial solutions, because it's a multifaceted problem. You have communities where the money would typically come from USDA. Alabama's had a history of sending money back to USDA in Washington as opposed to spending it where it needs to be spent. The same thing is true in terms of EPA, which provides money that could be helpful if it could be accessed through the state revolving loan fund. That money is dispensed by the state, and typically the Black Belt regions have not benefited from it because the policies that are in place are not beneficial. And if they have to provide a match, they can't because they don't have, again, the tax base to provide the match. So therefore, the problem is not resolved. So working with Duke, we're hoping to come up with potential solutions to finding financial solutions, policy solutions, technological solutions. Because the other part of this problem is that the technology that's currently being employed and that the regulators tell people they have to use don't work. Those that can afford systems have systems that they put in place, on-site septic systems. And when it rains a lot, the raw sewage backs up into the house. So that's still exposing families to these parasites and other potential diseases that one would not have to worry about if they had infrastructure that worked.
Well, it also gets to some of the curious thinking behind states like Alabama and here in North Carolina turning back federal Medicaid dollars for political reasons. When you do that, and nobody wants to spend public money and see their taxes go up, but you talked about the technology. You're doing research into this technology. That's money being spent into your community. You're then buying the technology. That's money being spent into your community and employing actually building it so people are actually paid to put it in place. Is that part of the argument here that this public money actually has a huge value in economic development?
I think the public money does have a huge value in economic development because if we look at, I'll use Montgomery for an example. When Hyundai announced that it was going to locate in Montgomery, the money that went to, there was some investment on the state and local level, but a lot of the investment came from the U.S. Department of Commerce to the Economic Development Administration. They're the ones that put in place the infrastructure, built the building, and all Hyundai had to come in and retrofit it. That was public money. But for some reason, we feel that public monies are only supposed to go to corporations and not go to support communities. And that's not fair because part of the economic paradigm is having a labor force that's healthy. And without that, we're continue to reinforce poverty.
And not to mention the economic development and economic circulation of money that's spent on solving these problems. Can you tell us what you talked about the USDA being kind of the source of funds historically? What about the Environmental Protection Agency? Is EPA any part of this?
EPA has been a part of it. I had the opportunity to testify before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, and EPA representatives were there and since that time have committed to solving this problem. There's an intergovernment working group that Mustafa Ali was a part of prior to leaving EPA. And their first priority was to address this wastewater problem in Lowndes County because they felt that what they could learn from it can be employed in rural communities across the country that have the same problem. So EPA has been an active partner in terms of helping us find solutions.
Catherine, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and I wish you the best of luck. And I'll tune in now and then. We'd love for you to keep us posted on your progress.
Thank you very much.
Catherine Coleman Flowers is the founder of the Alabama Center for Rural Enterprise Community Development Corporation and the Franklin Humanities Institute practitioner in residence at Duke University. You can find out more about her work at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we're going to talk with artist Nina Chanel Abney about her work as commentary on race and popular culture on the State of Things. Please stay tuned.